There may yet be a future for professional hockey. The Sports Network in Canada reported that the National Hockey League and the NHL Players Association have reached a collective bargaining agreement in principle. The two groups plan to discuss the terms of the agreement when they ratify the deal next week, assuming that it is ratified, after 301 days of lockout, which cost the NHL an entire professional season. The agreement is being welcomed by some, though criticized by others. The NHL was the first North American sports league to lose an entire year because of a labor dispute. David Naylor is a sports writer with the Toronto Globe and Mail, and he's with us from his home office in Ottawa. Good to have you on the program.
Thank you very much.
What is the agreement? Well, let me just go back. When the lockout happened, well, these two sides, obviously, if you're going to have a lockout for 301 days, were at loggerheads. But the major stumbling block was the insistence of management on having certainty over costs. That was interpreted as a salary cap, and the union said, no way.
The union said no way. They swore they would never do it. And really, that was the rallying point around which Bob Goodenow, the union president, rallied his troops. I mean, that was what this was all about. And I think you saw a fairly strong solidarity around that point, right through to the point where the season was canceled. And what happened, of course, right before the season was canceled in February, the players' side, the union, offered up a salary cap to try to get a deal to save the season. And in doing so, kind of buried their rallying point and going. I think you saw a distinctly different flavor coming from the player side after the season was canceled. Once they had put that cap on the table, because their reason for this fight was all of a sudden gone. Now it had all been about, we are willing to lose the season as long as we don't have to accept a cap. Now all of a sudden the players had lost an entire season, and yet they were negotiating a salary cap. And that seemed to suck the fight out of them.
Reports that I've seen suggest that every team will have a maximum salary under this contract of about $40 million per team, and a minimum salary of between $20 and $25 million.
Yeah, I think the numbers that we're working with right now are about $39 million at the high end and $21.5 at the low. And again, the players walked away from an offer in February that was $42.5 million for the high end. And I know you may have heard criticism saying, wow, they walked away from 42 and now they're going to accept 39. Again, that deal had no floor in it. So potentially you could have had teams spending as little as $15 million on payroll. That can't happen in this deal. There will also be more revenue sharing in this agreement, which means that the poorer teams will get money from the rich and be able to spend more. So it's potential that this deal could actually work out better for the players than the one that they walked away from in February, because the average amount that each team will spend will actually be more than it would have been perhaps under the $42.5 million cap. But salary caps are tough to get rid of once you've got one. You've noticed in the National Football League and in the NBA, they have never gone back. And I think what this really means about hockey is that hockey is now a salary cap league. The future labor negotiations won't be about whether hockey has a cap or not. It'll be about how the formula is made, how long the deal was. They'll be tweaking other elements, but a salary cap in hockey is now here to stay.
We're talking with David Naylor of the sports writer for the Globe and Mail from Ottawa, Canada. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is, as I understand it, also a six-year agreement.
Yeah, and I think there was a strong desire on both sides to not have this happen again in, say, 3 or 4 years. And I think because they both sides have an enormous task ahead of them, I think, repairing the damage. I mean, there is no precedent for this. There is no precedent for a league that that went through an entire year without a season. I mean, the only thing close is what baseball went through in 1994 when they canceled the World Series after a strike that took place in that, I believe, late August. So they still played most of the season. The other thing, I think, is that hockey, the momentum of the business, the sort of sport entertainment business of hockey in the United States had been kind of on a negative bend already heading into this. And baseball, I think, as we would all recognize, is strongly rooted all over North America, particularly, say, all over the United States. Hockey is not. I mean, it's a sport that has very strong roots in Canada and a few Northern American cities, but there is no real precedent, and I don't know if the baseball comparable is really fair when you try to envision how this sport repairs itself, it's got to be at least 6 years, I think, for them to be able to try to get the business back to what it was.
And there had been speculation that once an agreement was reached, it would be reached without several of the teams in some of those marginal areas in the United States in particular, that hockey had overexpanded. So far as we know, will all the teams come back?
All the teams will come back. I guess the question is, will they still be around in 3 or 4 or 5 years? Because I think one of the things that's sort of been missed in this whole story is that a lot of the issues that hockey has, business issues, have nothing to do with collective bargaining or what the amount of compensation they pay their players. I mean, there are attendance woes all over the National Hockey League, and that was before this lockout. If the fans don't come back in places like Nashville and Carolina and Atlanta and Anaheim, places where, despite some recent success on the ice, attendance had been waning tremendously, I think there's real questions about the viability of those teams and whether or not the NHL might have to retrench into some more traditional hockey markets like the ones that they exited during the 1990s here in Canada, places like Winnipeg and Quebec City. You know, those aren't issues that you can solve negotiating with your players. They now have to make hockey hip and cool and try and regain some of that momentum that the sport had in the United States during the early 1990s when they were expanding and television ratings seemed to be on the upswing. I mean, there is no cable television deal right now for the National Hockey League in the United States. They had to deal with ESPN. They don't right now. That really moved them off the top tier of sports when you look at where everybody else is.
And there's a lot of aspects to this agreement that are going to be interesting, including the large number of free agents, a new draft, everybody perhaps taking a salary cut, the higher-priced players taking as much as a 24% salary cut. But I did want to ask you, in the short time we have remaining, they were talking about changes to make the game itself more attractive, everything from a possible shootout to eliminate ties at the end of games, and reducing the amount of goalie equipment to make him a little bit less like the Michelin man there in the goal.
Yeah, they've talked about bringing goalie equipment back in line to what it was, say, 10 or 15 years ago. Goalies have very gradually got larger. They talked about getting rid of rules for offside that kind of slow the game down to try to open it up and give it more flow. They've talked about it, the extra period of overtime and then the shootout that you mentioned. All of these things, I think, are, you know, have both upside and downside, because, of course, you could make the product potentially unrecognizable to the people who loved it the way it was, or maybe wanted to see it tweaked but not change that dramatically. And I come back to the question, you know, in places where people aren't really interested in hockey or seem to have gone away from it, drifted away, does it matter what you do to the sport? I mean, if people aren't interested in hockey, I'm not sure you can twist it like a pretzel to try to make it something that they might be interested in. But if their association with the game larger momentum isn't there, I just don't know if it matters. That's the open question.
David Naylor, thank you very much.
Hey, my pleasure.
David Naylor, sports writer for the Globe and Mail, joined us from his home office in Ottawa, Canada. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan.